Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Tonight, we welcome a leader who is not only helping shape the future of the Greater Lehigh Valley, she's helping redefine what modern community leadership looks like. Marcy Lesko, President and CEO of the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley, is leading one of the region's most influential organizations through unprecedented growth, transformational partnerships, and record-breaking fundraising success. Under her leadership, United Way has now achieved 16 consecutive years of campaign growth, most recently raising an extraordinary $27.7 million to support education, healthy aging, food access, housing stability, mental health, and emergency services throughout the region. But what makes this story so compelling is that it's about far more than dollars raised. It's about vision. It's about collaboration. It's about bringing together powerhouse business leaders, campaign chairs, board members, nonprofits, schools, and community partners to tackle some of the biggest challenges facing families today. Marcy has become known for leading with both strategy and heart, building a culture of urgency, accountability, innovation, and immeasurable impact, while never losing sight of the human side of the mission. Tonight, we're diving into leadership, resilience, pressure, purpose, and the bold work happening behind the scenes to strengthen lives across the community every single day. Please welcome a true trailblazer, Marcy Lesko. Marcy, I was at the event a few weeks ago where the $27.7 million was announced, which is just phenomenal. I think a first for the organization, perhaps a first for not just the regional organization, but the national organization. I mean, that is incredible. So I have a few questions for you. You actually spent years growing within United Way before becoming the president and CEO. Was there a defining moment when you realized you were ready to lead the organization yourself? And what did that look like?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Oh. I'm so delighted to be with you today, Melody, and for all the good work that you do in community. And I'm really honored to be here with you. So thank you for this question. I think, you know, this is my 20th year at our United Way, 2 years as the CEO, and I really grew up in the organization. It has been an unbelievable path to get here. And you know, I think that there were lots of defining moments that helped me to grow. I had lots of mentors along the way, folks that helped me to understand how to rise in leadership and to look at the world in a much broader view and to determine how I could be part of that. So I would say some of the defining moments for me are probably one of the most powerful ones was when I took the time to define my own values. I think that leaders can really benefit from the quiet time and the discovery of who we are, and also to understand what the organization needs, and in our case, what the community needs, and how to match up who we are with those needs and how to create something really powerful. So I would say the turning point for me was about 6 years ago when I did the work of cultivating my own values.
I love that. I've been doing a little bit of that myself. And it you know, it really does make a difference. It's important to listen to yourself and then, you know, align with, you know, what your passions are. A lot of people still associate United Way primarily with workplace campaigns and fundraising drives. What do you wish people truly understood about the depth and breadth of the work happening today? Because not everybody knows. I mean, us in the business community do, but maybe for some of the listeners that aren't familiar with exactly what United Way does, can you talk to that a little bit?
I love that. So United Way has been the community's fundraiser for more than 100 years, and our position and role in that is, you know, without a doubt, a critical piece to the success of our community. And so, like you said, we've had, 16 years of UP campaigns. We don't know of any other United Way that has achieved that milestone.
Awesome.
We know there are United Ways that are much larger than we are, and we know there are United Ways that are much smaller than we are. But what has been our success is that we've had sustained growth, which is unusual and really an indication of what happens in the Lehigh Valley. I think what a lot of people maybe don't totally know about who we are is how much work we do in community building. Mm. We really act as the connective tissue between various entities and helping to bring out the best of everyone so that we can address the needs that are right in front of us, as well as to look a bit down the road to see what might be coming and how we might get in front of those things.
Mm-hmm. And so in the intro, I had talked a little bit about the $27.7 million raised for some of those initiatives. You surpassed the annual campaign with that, which is, again, another record-breaking year for the organization. What do you believe is fueling that momentum? And also, I know that you had just recently named a new chief philanthropy officer, Jill Wheeler, which we celebrate. But talk to me a little bit about what do you feel is fueling the momentum and driving that growth? And what do you have planned for Jill?
That's right. Well, first of all, Jill Wheeler is a powerhouse.
She is. We are
so lucky that she has decided to share her talent with our organization and with the community in this role. And she's just getting warmed up. But boy, she is hitting the ground running. We are so excited to have her with us. So I think, everyone says it, but it really is true. The Lehigh Valley is a very special place. And for me, a hallmark of success means that no one person can really point to who did it. Mm-hmm. And so we all sort of, you came to our event a few weeks ago, and I think there were so many people in the room mm-hmm. that really felt that this event was for them because of what they contributed. And that is really, as they say, success has many fathers or mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the hallmark of a really successful endeavor. But a lot of people ask us, what has helped us to succeed in this way? What helps us to keep growing? And I think first and foremost, it's a culture of growth. And so we have a really strong culture in our organization, which includes our staff, our volunteers, our donors, our partners. We just don't limit ourselves to what all the challenges that are in front of us. We understand what they are, we acknowledge those, but culture is really important to us. The second is that we're really competitive.
Mm-hmm.
We know that when we win, the community wins, and so we just don't accept defeat ever. And so we're always thinking about, okay, what's the tallest mountain in front of us? How do we conquer that one? How do we go after that? Because again, we know that the community benefits when we succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's our culture. I think it's our mindset. I think it's being surrounded by a really special place in this community. All of those things really help to fuel our success.
Yeah. And, if anyone was at the event, though, they can attest to the fact that the room was absolutely, I think you had how many people?
500.
Yeah, 500 yeah. people there. And everybody was engaged, but you have one heck of a board, coalition. I mean, just an incredible amount of not just a lot of really talented people, but incredibly influential. And that network of board members and campaign chairs and corporate partners and philanthropic leaders, how important has that powerhouse of leadership network been to the organization's success? Because I think there is there's a correlation even on how things are moving forward within the Lehigh Valley and who's connected to it. Can you speak to that just a little bit and how important that influential network that's also very committed has been to the growth of the organization?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Volunteers and influential leaders are absolutely essential to our success. And so we've been very intentional in how we build our board, how we build our volunteer cabinets, how we connect at the community level, because it's top down, bottom up, and every which way in between. The success of our work is being connected to influential people. And again, we sometimes just think that that happens at the grass tops, but it also happens at the grassroots level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it would be one thing if we were all celebrating just a dollar amount, but it's the work that we're doing together that makes it really powerful. It doesn't feel like an empty suit. You know, mm-hmm. we have a really strong product, which is community change, community support, and it's real and it's transparent and it is palpable. And when people see that clear vision and the clear path of how specifically they can get plugged in and involved, I mean, the sky's the limit. And so, you know, assembling a group of influential people is absolutely essential. It allows us all to move the work forward, mm-hmm. and it helps us to open doors that may be a little trouble, you know, getting through. But, you know, again, not only on the fundraising side, but also on the impact side. And so, you know, we've just been really lucky. We build the bench intentionally, and it's sometimes 3 to 5 years deep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to touch on that a little bit, because you had talked about, you know, having the influential network and the value of course, the fundraising element, but also there's other components to the success, right? So from Chris Martin of Martin Guitar to Mike and Diane Molesky committing to $1 million as a leadership gift, your campaign chairs have played major roles in driving momentum. What makes a great campaign chair? But more importantly, because not everybody, I mean, definitely we want the philanthropists that are listening to this podcast to, you know, make a big check if they can to support the community through the United Way. But what about somebody who maybe can't write a check like that? What makes a really good campaign chair and also a community ambassador?
Boy, I want to pick up on the last sentence that you had. We have some donors that have been giving to us consistently $50 or $100 for 40 years.
Mm.
And, you know, we sometimes think it's the really big check that, you know, is the most important. And trust me, the large numbers of dollars matter.
Mm-hmm.
That consistency also matters. And so I would say a campaign chair that recognizes and acknowledges that, I mean, an annual campaign where we have almost 10,000 donors. The majority of them give anywhere from $25 to $1,000. And it's all of those little pieces and parts and components make up a huge impact for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a campaign chair, whether it's Chris or Mike and Diane, or this year we have Amy and Rick Bucher.
Yes.
They approach it in the same way. It's with vision. It's by sharing their reputation and their influence, which we make sure that their reputation and influence is well spent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's on an effort that means a lot and is creating true impact. It's consistency, it's commitment. And I would say one of the most important parts of this is humility.
Mm.
You know, you have to be in a space to understand that it's not about you per se, but mm-hmm. you have a role to play. And if you're willing to share your reputation, your credibility with this effort, and we'll make it worth your while, and then have some fun with it. We've had so many folks get so creative, and it's always a delight.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I've seen quite a bit of engagement too that they've been able to do, you know, over the years, like different various campaign chairs is not just being an ambassador, but also engaging those around them in order to be able to get involved. Myself included.
Of course.
You stepped into this role following longtime CEO David Lewis, someone recognized across the region. Can you talk to me a little bit about what pressure came with leading during such a major transition, and how did you navigate it?
You know, David and I led together. And so we led together, we fought with each other, we polished each other up in community, and we led together for many years. Mm-hmm. He is a remarkable fundraising leader and a remarkable strategist. I had the operational aspect of the organization, so I knew everything inside and out about the place, soup to nuts. And he really mentored me on the resource development and the fundraising side, mm-hmm. and helped me to polish up who I am as a leader. And so I think, you know, there was an ease in I understood our business. I understood what was needed. But I would tell you that there was absolutely an element my first 2 years in a prove it, you know, because being a leader on the fundraising side is essential to the role. And so I needed to demonstrate that I had the chops to do it. Mm-hmm. And I have. And so I think there was some prove it pressure that was there, not only, you know, on the fundraising side, but, you know, could I sit in the big seat, you know, after having operated and helped lead the organization for a long time. But it's very different when you're the person in the seat. Mm-hmm. And so those are the moments when that pressure translates into action, and you can choose to, you know, enter that space with eyes wide open and with an open heart, but also being able to respond to literally thousands of constituents around you. Mm-hmm. And so it meant that's when my values came into action, you know, knowing who I am and how to show up and how to listen. I would say, you know, the prove it was the pressure, but the values and the experience are what carry the day.
Yeah. And actually, your leadership style comes across as both strategic and deeply human centered. Share with me how you would describe your philosophy as a leader today, and particularly if you wouldn't mind, also as a female leader today, because I think the women also need to hear from you.
Sure. Human centered. Is the way that I would describe my leadership. You know, I was listening to a person that was speaking at a recent summit, and she said, we can be both high performing and have high humanity. And that really spoke to me because I have high standards and expectations. I don't mess around when it comes to how we are allocating donor resources, mm-hmm. And being good stewards of those things, and what it means to serve community. There is never any grass growing under my feet. I model leadership every step of the way. It is embedded in my DNA, in how I show up, how I treat the work that is in front of me. And my clock runs 24/7. And so I've had lots of team members say that I lead with high standards, mm-hmm. but it's also a high degree of humanity and human-centered approach. Mm-hmm. My assistant said to me recently, you know, what is interesting to me that I think people should know about you is that no matter what is in front of us, you never degrade anyone around you. Mm-hmm. You are very focused on what needs to get done and with a sense of humor. But my values are on display everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. I think as women, I try to resist falling into any of the traditional traps around what it means to be, you know, is there misogyny? Is there sexism? Is there any of those things? Of course those things exist. Mm-hmm. I stay focused, eyes on the prize, mm-hmm. on what needs to get done. And to understand the difference between data and noise, which means that there might be a piece of feedback that's wrapped in packaging that I don't like, but there might be some data there that is really important for me to pay attention to. So I think that discernment is one of the most powerful things we can do as any leader, but especially as women, because sometimes the data comes wrapped in a lot of noise, and we need to pay attention to that.
That is the soundbite of the century, let me tell you. I love that because, it speaks to not just leaders, female leaders, whatever. I mean, at the core of it, that's what you should be demonstrating, you know.
And yes.
And honestly, I think it's probably been one of the hallmarks of your success and why everything comes together so perfectly for you.
Oh, it doesn't come together perfectly. Thank you. If it appears that way, that's beautiful.
It does. United Way's work now spans education, housing, food insecurity, mental health, healthy aging, emergency support, and so much more. How do you prioritize and respond when the needs across the region are so significant and constantly changing? I mean, you guys, and you're not just a fundraising organization. You guys are boots on the ground. There's been some things that have happened recently that you guys have rolled up your sleeves, and it has been all hands on deck with the entire team. Talk to me a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
That's exactly right. So I've been in human services almost 30 years, and so I've seen some of the worst things that you can see and experience some of those things. And I think that our responsibility is to provide steady leadership in times of uncertainty. And so I always talk about putting, you know, a cool hand on a hot head. When we are navigating really challenging times in community, whether it's a house fire, you know, the most recent fire in Easton where there were 67 people displaced, lots of different concerns about how to provide support for people on the other side. When we were dealing with a really serious issue around food access and food supply at our pantries across the region and what that might mean, we needed to move quickly. We sometimes refer to it as moving at the speed of need. But I think that one of the ways that we try to do it is with real steadiness and intentionality, because it doesn't serve anyone if we're just reacting. And so how we approach our work is very much response-based versus reaction-based. We must move quickly. We must get close to the pain. We need to understand what's actually happening and listen to credible messengers about what's occurring so that we can respond appropriately. But we can't be running around talking about the sky is falling because all it does is contribute to the chaos. So leading with a steady hand, understanding that these issues are complicated, they're challenging, they're increasing. So trying to identify ways to respond and ameliorate those issues without contributing to the problem, I think, is our approach.
Yeah. And you, okay, so you said two things. The speed.
Move at the speed of need.
Move at the speed of need and put a cold hand on a hot head. And those are two terms that I want to make sure that we just call out, because not only is that relevant to community work.
That's right.
It's also very relevant in industry as well.
Of course.
You've helped lead nationally recognized collective impact and community school initiatives. Why has collaboration become such a defining part of your strategy? And talk to me a little bit about how it's kind of driven everything forward for you, because there's a lot of things that you guys are doing with a lot of other coalitions and groups and things of that nature.
Yeah, of course. So I think there's the cliche, you know, response, which is we're better together, right? And that's true. It absolutely is true. I was thinking about this question and reflecting on it, and the word that kept coming into my mind was sustainable. When we do work in collaboration with others, it has the ability to be more sustainable than if we're just doing it by ourselves. And so when we create shared ownership and shared buy-in and shared commitment and complementary efforts where you have an asset, a contribution of some kind, and it matches or mirrors my contribution, now we're cooking with gas. Now we can create something that that allows us to truly drive impact. I think those are the moments when it becomes more sustainable. And I would say that that is the piece that I think is sometimes overlooked.
I want to shift gears here a little bit, and I want to talk about leadership and, you know, some of the things that, that you face on a daily basis, because your role, I mean, there's so much going on. It's high performing, it's mission driven, but there's a lot of emotional weight that's attached to it, and you're still leading at a very high level. And leadership can look polished publicly, but every leader faces setbacks, doubt, or difficult moments behind the scenes. What has been one of the greatest challenges of your career, and what has it taught you?
You know, I have had experiences that were personal in nature that affected my day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. So I'll never forget, you know, being executive vice president, and I was new, less than a year in as executive vice president, mm-hmm. and all of my family's in Ohio, and I was on the phone with my mom, and she found my dad dead. And I was in the pickup line to pick up my son from school, and the experience of being on the other end of the phone 400 miles away while losing my parent was devastating. I went through a very difficult and challenging divorce. I was married to someone who had severe and significant mental health issues. And then 6 years ago, even though we had remained very close, we were very close friends, we were family, he died by suicide. And I'm the one who found him. Oh. And when you navigate such deep personal tragedy, it can't help but have an impact on your daily life. And those were moments where it impacted me professionally. And I think that you sometimes think that it impacted you professionally negatively. And certainly there was some of that. I think it was challenging. I had to take some time off. I needed to help my kids navigate through really deep trauma and grief, and my own. But I think that those experiences for me, I had a therapist say to me one time, you have a remarkable ability to metabolize grief and trauma into power. And I take that as a compliment.
I love that.
It has impacted the way that I show up as a leader in community because I understand what those moments can do,
the gravity,
and how they can define you. And it has helped me in my career in a positive way because of my resilience.
Yeah, I love that. That spoke to me. You know, we're living in a time of burnout, uncertainty, division, and constant pressure. I'm curious, what advice would you offer leaders trying to stay resilient and effective in today's world? And how do you define success?
So I think peer groups can help.
Okay.
I think being with other people in similar roles that can relate to what you are navigating and seeking their wise counsel, people that you can trust. I've been very fortunate to have a number of mentors from various roles in community that I can contact and talk with about challenging times that are in front of me, personal or professional, and they're able to help me to navigate that. I think being in touch and understanding what burnout can look like for you and doing the pre-work so that when it shows, first of all, however you can do that to prevent it through I've been really intentional about my health, my physical, emotional, and spiritual health, especially in the last few years. And so, you know, those things help prevent some of that burnout and that impact of stress that can take a toll on you. I mean, these jobs can cause a heart attack or a stroke. I mean, let's be serious about it. And so it's that intentionality and taking care of yourself. Success for me means that I am building the bench in my organization 10 deep. I started thinking about succession plan on day one of my role as CEO. I started wondering who would take the seat after me and how I would be intentional about building the skills and depth of leadership in my own organization. And that for me is what success looks like.
And if 10 seconds, if somebody wanted to get involved with the organization, where do they go?
You can go to our website, unitedwayglv.org. There are a plethora of ways to get involved, but I would just say, just show up. I'm happy to have you anywhere you come.
Yeah. What an incredible conversation with Marcy Lesko, a leader whose work is impacting lives across the greater Lehigh Valley every day. What stands out most is that this isn't just about fundraising totals or organizational growth, although those numbers are extraordinary. It's about leadership that brings people together. It's about building trust, creating partnerships, responding with urgency, and driving meaningful change where it matters most. Under Marcy's leadership, she continues to raise the bar for what community impact can look like, powered by an incredible team, a committed board, visionary campaign chairs, generous donors, and a region willing to rally around one another. And perhaps the biggest takeaway from tonight's conversation is this: real change happens when people stop assuming someone else will solve the problem and decide to become a part of the solution themselves. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Trailblazers. I'm Melody Bradford, and we'll see you next time as we continue spotlighting the bold leaders, change makers, and visionaries shaping the future of our communities.